Welcome to the Half Hour Happy Hour. Your chance to sit back, have a drink, and listen to some insightful musings, funny anecdotes, the occasional rant, and an all-too-frequent Bruce Willis reference. Join Jen, Justin, and Jer in hoisting a beverage or three, picking apart topics of the day and explaining how things came to be the way they are. It's one part educational, one part bacchanal, best served over ice with a healthy dose of wit and a twist of cynicism.
Hey kids, and welcome back to the Half Hour Happy Hour with your hosts Jen, Justin, and I'm Jer. This week we will be talking about the true cost of commuting, post office wanting you to go old school, and gift beer.
Huzzah!
Gift beer. We always love gift beer.
We do love gift beer. Thank you, Suzanne, for the gift beer.
Yep. This week we are drinking Schlafly Pumpkin Ale. This comes out of St. Louis, Missouri, bottled and brewed by the St. Louis Brewery. And it's their special release. You always got to love a special release. And it's their pumpkin ale. It's 8%, which is pretty strong.
You can't tell over all the cinnamon, though.
No. And you know, I think I mentioned on one of the previous episodes why I don't like pumpkin beers is because they usually beat you over the head with the spices. And this is a prime example.
That's not true. You said that you don't like the pumpkin beers because it feels like you take a pumpkin to the face. This is the opposite problem, and it doesn't taste like there's any freaking pumpkin in it.
But it's all the spices. I'm not a big fan of the – it's really spicy.
It is. It's like a flavor pouch of pumpkin pie seasoning. And then, you know, they put it in water, put some alcohol in there, and, yeah, they forgot the pumpkin.
Yeah. It's like cinnamon right off the bat, and then you can taste the nutmeg. And yeah, no, I'm not a fan. I wouldn't have another one.
Like, I'm torn. Part of me really kind of likes it. It's a flavor explosion. Calling it pumpkin is perhaps a misnomer, right. But otherwise I kind of enjoy it.
Special release flavor explosion.
Wow. I think I have to drink a little bit more before I decide. I think that I need to see it warms up and get down to the bottom of the glass and feel like I'm going to have a sugar high by the time I'm done with this beer. It feels like pumpkin pixie stick.
That's good. 8% sugar high.
Yeah.
Drunken.
Well, I mean, the fact that there's still residual sugars in there is just shocking at 8%. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hmm. So we'll get Jen's verdict a little bit later. For now, let's put them up.
Yep.
So speaking of beer and and brewing and Schlafly, I have a cool story about cyborg yeast. And I honestly, I don't really know why they call it cyborg yeast because it's not.
Because it goes into the beer and it goes pew, 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 pew. And it kills the sugars. Pew,
pew. It's not really robotic in any sense or anything like that. So a team of researchers from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, they have basically they set up a feedback loop with their yeast where they have put this gene in it that when they hit it with controlled bursts of red light, it turns on the protein that, you know, carbonates sugar, turns it into alcohol, things like that. And then they also put another gene on there that reports when the gene is active by emitting light. So they can detect when it's on and
so
you know, control
glows?
It to turn. It doesn't glow, but they can turn the yeast on and off to control how much it's
the fermenting process,
yeah, and get real time feedback on how that is going by this other gene that's telling it how it's doing.
But you said it emits light.
Yeah,
right. Which means your beer glows.
Your beer glows.
I guess. I mean,
or it emits light.
I don't know. I don't know how much light it's emitting, but yeah, it is emitting some light.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, so pretty cool.
I wanted to emit enough light that when I'm drunk, I glow.
I would be content with just finding my way in the dark.
No, come on. You go to a party and everybody's walking around glowing. That's a damn good time.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Until you see all the glowing urine spots.
This is not like a black light for cat spots. Christ. Ew.
What? Drunk people sometimes pee in weird places. It happens.
You were not allowed to drink around.
I don't.
Okay. You said people. That's a broad statement.
I'm better than most people, so.
This is bizarre.
I can go in the potty all by myself.
I've actually got a segue.
Oh,
great.
Ooh, ooh. So speaking of glowing bodily fluids.
Oh, God.
So Ryanair, their CEO has announced that he wants to put porn on planes.
clown porn?
Oh, don't tease. That would be awesome. No, and so it's not even going to be on like the seat backs like most planes. He wants people to be able to use their iPods, iPads, whatever, to log into a central server. And basically, it would be like at a hotel room where you could get your SpectraVision on.
If people want to watch porn on the plane on their iPods and iPads, they can already do that. They don't need to.
That's kind of where I was thinking. Right. But at the same time, when you're in a hotel room, once you check out, let's just go with the fact that at least we believe that they're changing the sheets, they're changing all that stuff. This is a seat.
Yeah.
You know, they're not taking the seat cover off unless they're going to put plastic seats on everything.
Right.
Two, you know how many blankets they're going to go through on a given flight? That's where they can make their money back.
They'll need to invent a new kind of bag to go next to the air sick bag.
Smaller, thinner. Yeah.
No, this is obviously a brilliant idea.
Number one, seats are too small. Dude, it's cramped enough as it is, right? Yeah, dude elbowing you underneath the blanket, problem number
one.
Think
how annoyed you get when the kid behind you is kicking the seat.
Problem number two, crinkly, like if you're going to have the plastic bags for sanitary reasons, can you imagine? Like, you don't even have to be sitting next to the dude. The dude three rows up is like, crinkle, crinkle, crinkle. And you're like, thank goodness he's sanitary. No!
Okay, I'm actually going to just go from the logistical angle of, okay, so you take off, you log in.
The euphemisms are just killing me already.
Exactly. But then, okay, so what do you do for the next 4 hours of the flight?
Right.
Like,
nap.
Okay, well done.
Yeah.
The next problem is you can't smoke in the lavatory.
You order one of those little things of rum and
I'm good.
Lord.
You know, it might not be a bad idea.
Well, this guy was known for coming up with crazy stuff like limiting one bathroom per plane and charging for it, which apparently wasn't a...
Probably not a crowd pleaser.
No, not a big crowd pleaser.
Speaking of spots all over the plane.
Oh, you both want to go in there. Well, that's going to be twice.
No, my two-year-old really, really has to go, and we're fresh out of quarters.
Mm. Oh, you swipe it. Swipe a card.
The two-year-old does?
Why not?
Mommy, can I have your credit card? I need to pee.
Lord.
Yeah.
And maybe watch some porn while I'm here.
Well, yeah, if it's on your iPad. You could always adjourn, pay the extra couple bucks for some privacy. Yeah, right. Go into the lab. There you go.
I don't know if you've been on a plane lately, but those bathrooms aren't that big.
No, but it's still better than, you know, bruising the ribs of the person sitting next to you.
I can't remember the last time I've been in an airport or in an airplane bathroom.
Oh, I can.
I haven't been on a flight that's longer than, you know, 2 hours, so I'll hold it. I'm good.
I've had to, but mostly from the beer consumption on the flight and pre-flight.
Right.
Whiskey on the way home.
Mm-hmm. But no, typically the nice thing about I've always found nice about bathrooms on airplanes is that the curvature of the wall comes up, so you can just kind of lean, and it helps steady. It's almost like a gyroscopic stabilizer. Okay.
You know, I've never had this experience.
No.
Although I do really like peeing in modes of transportation.
Just for fun.
My favorite. No, when I have to pee. Okay. I mean, it's kind of a necessity, but I love trains and buses. Have you ever peed on a bus? Well, you guys are different. But like when you sit down to pee on a bus, like you can actually open that little window and wave to people and they don't know what's going on. And it just amuses the shit out of me. Oh, fun.
You know, my thing is like trains, buses, things like that. Whenever somebody goes and uses the bathroom, everybody else can smell it. Maybe not for the whole time, but
I didn't say pooping. I don't take joy even peeing. Out of, like,
I mean, you could still that ammonia smell from the flush. Like you could still smell it for a minute. So me, like, unless I have to, I'm not going to subject everybody else to that. If I don't have to pee, I'm not going to.
I've been on buses for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. It was one of those things where, yeah,
if I had to, I mean,
gonna have to happen.
I'm going to,
because it's much better than having to lift up your feet in the back of the bus.
I don't enjoy it. It's not a fun endeavor for me.
Well, no, if I don't have to, I don't either. But, you know.
Well, no, Jen made it sound like it was a hobby. On weekends, I go ride buses and pee.
So I can wave to passing cars.
Listen, it's funny.
It is. Actually, I was going to do a throwback, but I dropped it from my article list. But they just finished the 600-mile trip on that toilet motorcycle.
Oh, sweet. How'd that go?
Very well, apparently.
Says the people in front of them or the people behind them?
Everything moved along as expected.
Yeah, there were a couple of really bad puns in the article, right, which is really why I dropped it. But but no, apparently it went real well, and a lot of kudos to the comfort of the seat.
Jeez.
Well, this is a very interesting segue. I'm going to go ahead and bring it up. I saw this headline and it made me think of Jer.
Oh, God.
More because Jer likes headlines and not because Jer's a sex offender, but...
Okay. Well, thank you.
The headline is, sex offender serving life sentence in Florida, only in Florida, says soy-based prison food is cruel and unusual punishments.
There's a valid argument for that.
It's endangering his health.
Yeah.
Because of his thyroid and immune system.
And they've shown that if men have too much soy, it'll decrease their testosterone levels.
Oh, and he won't be angry and violent anymore because he's in prison as a sex offender.
That's not the way it works.
No, it actually feminizes men, and to the point where they start developing breasts and...
Mood swing. It doesn't, testosterone doesn't mean happy-go-lucky.
It's, yeah, when men metabolize soy-based products, it causes an estrogen-like compound to flood the bloodstream.
Yeah.
Hey, check this out. Homeboy's in prison.
Well, I get that. Right. And his breasts will make him very popular with the other inmates. But
then the prison doctors are going to have to start worrying about when he goes through his changes and hot flashes and things like that.
Yeah, I say it's perfectly reasonable. He deserves it. I guess
he deserves the soy, or yes. He deserves not soy.
No, he deserves soy. to be perfectly honest, they are in prison to be punished according to our society
and that's a whole nother topic.
Sure. But and I'm not saying his punishment should be breasts and the fondling thereof, but ultimately he should be given the minimum nutritional requirements mandated.
That slop in the Matrix that contains all of your
yes,
that's what you get to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a far better deterrent.
Oh yeah.
You know, that and no cable.
No cable, no conjugal visits.
Questionable AC.
Not even that. Like, this is not...
I'm very Machiavellian on my views of how the penal system should be run. I am 100%, you steal, get your hand cut off, you sex offend, get your castrated. I mean, yeah, it's brutal, but it's going to have a positive impact on crime.
Well, and it's cheaper all the way around.
Yeah.
So that's valid.
Yeah, no, I never understood the logic of coddling criminals. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh, you're rehabilitating them.
Whatever. No, you're not. No, you're not. Yeah, okay. I can understand the argument of, okay, let's not do cruel punishment. Let's rehabilitate them. That argument is sound. Our prison system is not rehabilitation. It's perpetuating the system.
Right.
Not to mention the rate of recidivism for criminals is ridiculous. Right. So there's no proof that the rehabilitation in any of the forms that we've tried is actually effective.
Right.
No. Yeah. In fact, I would say go ahead and put them into a separate military division. Let that...
Fodder.
Mm. Fodder. Yeah. Total fodder.
Mm-hmm.
Like the people to go in even before the Marine Corps gets there. Just
You should go and you should be immediately subjected to boot camp, which is significantly worse than prison.
Absolutely.
And you should go through boot camp until you're brainwashed enough. I mean, come on, the U.S. military knows how to do that very
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to throw you on the front lines and you can either defect and get shot by us
mm-hmm.
or you can shoot the bad guy before you become fodder yourself.
Right.
And it can be like a gladiator system. Like if you
there
make
are plenty
survive
of sci-fi
tours,
movies and stuff where that is the premise. Yeah. Like you're convicts and if you survive, whatever, you get your freedom. You know?
Earn your citizenship back.
Right. No, I think that's a good system.
And if you're fighting for our freedoms, we won't make you eat soy.
Right.
No. No, MREs, which are actually significantly better.
Worse. Yeah.
Worse. Well, no, they're pretty good. The new
ones, my God, they're dreadful.
The new ones are awesome.
Mm.
I haven't had one
of the new ones. I've had a couple MREs that make me...
Old ones? Because the new ones aren't that bad now.
No, the new ones like Wolfgang Puck did.
I read that.
Like, they're awesome.
Fair warning, though, Wolfgang, you will never have worse breath in your life than after eating, like, a microwavable Wolfgang Puck meal.
Well, yeah, but MREs come with gum, so you're all good.
Oh, well, in that case.
Yeah, pop a piece of Trident and you're fine.
But is it layers?
No, I don't think so.
Because our military needs to be paid in layers. Oh, I'd like to see them make that commercial and see how well that flies.
So I got a quick one, real quick, and then I think we'll take a break.
Is it quick?
It is pretty quick.
Is it quick one? That's quick. Can you be quick about it?
I can be quick about it. It's actually, because the details, are pretty basic. It's pretty straightforward, but it's actually pretty awesome. there's a new cell provider called Republic Wireless who has just launched. It was only a couple of weeks ago, but they are offering unlimited talk, text, and data for $20 a month, which is ridiculous because, you know, right now, most of the other carriers, their 2 gigabyte data plan is $20 a month.
So where what's their coverage look like?
So basically what they do is you it's $20 a month, $200 to sign up. With your sign up fee, you get a phone. It's an LG Android phone. But the way they're able to do this is they're using modern technology. They're doing everything over Wi-Fi rather than over the cell towers. Now, not 100%. It's right. If you have Wi-Fi, it goes over Wi-Fi. If not, they've rented out some of Sprint's network, so it'll go over Sprint's networks. Oh, okay.
So it's over Sprint's networks.
When you don't have Wi-Fi, but it's primarily set up to be a Wi-Fi network, which is, you know, the way things should be because it's... And the fact that, you know, talk, text, and data is all, you know, it's all the same stuff.
It's all ones and zeros.
We've been conditioned by the big cellular networks right now that this stuff is a hot commodity and it's, you know, it's all complicated and it costs so much money, and really it doesn't.
I mean, right.
This stuff is dirt cheap. So the fact that these guys are offering this now for $20 a month is pretty awesome. And they've even said, you know, like, we realize that the freedom, you know, there's only one handset, one phone you can use right now. That sucks, but we're working on making it so that you can use any phone. You know, this is going to be, you know, the next evolution of what this cell providers need to be.
Well, and realistically, it shouldn't be all that difficult to take any kind of Sprint Android phone and import it.
Yeah, it really shouldn't. It's mostly just going to take, I think it's probably political and bureaucratic. They've got to get them to allow them to do it because it's, you know, if this takes off, it's going to completely destroy the business model of they have the potential to be the next Netflix, you know, whatever.
So no, that's awesome.
So my question to you guys is, does your phone not primarily use Wi-Fi when available?
Not for voice.
Not for voice.
Not for text.
Yeah. That stuff never goes over Wi-Fi.
No, it's always network.
Unless you have unless you specifically installed an app to do it, it does not.
Does
go
iMessage, the new? No, iMessage goes over Wi-Fi.
The new one does. Yeah. But that's a specific app that you have to use.
No, it's not.
I don't care if it's bundled and integrated into your stupid iPhone and you don't know it. It's still a separate app that you're using. It's not part of the way that the cell network does not treat it as data. You're going through another app, whether you realize it or not.
What happens if you lose Wi-Fi connection with iMessage?
I don't know. I haven't paid attention.
Okay. That's just one of those questions.
I know you can't FaceTime unless you have a Wi-Fi connection.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
But you can Skype on any phone.
Yep.
Using the visual video thing.
Yep.
Interesting.
That is Apple's user experience control thing. That's what that FaceTime restriction is.
Gotcha.
Right. They don't want anybody else's software to make them look bad, so they set those restrictions on how you can use it.
Gotcha.
Same thing with Flash and all that kind of stuff.
Well, did you hear that Apple actually was able to port Siri
to,
onto a 4 and then onto a 3GS?
Yeah.
And so when prompted, Apple said, no, we're absolutely not going to create a solution for those two other phones.
Yeah. No, Apple Apple didn't port it. Somebody ported it.
Oh, somebody ported
somebody
it.
Apple said, no, it's not. So, no, we're not supporting that. Yeah.
No, not
and,
at all.
And it's because of that user experience control that they do.
Right. They said the 3GS just chugs along on it. But,
yeah.
But the 4 is fine.
Right. Yeah, because it's not, I mean, the hardware is not super different.
Right.
You know, I just re-upped my contract with Verizon a couple months ago, so I'm screwed for the next 2 years. But anybody who is either out of contract or coming up on out of your contract.
Your contract, like your early termination fees, like
$350.
You would save if you drop $350 right now, and usually they will
recoup it in four months.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Because I'm paying a little over $100 right now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're right.
That's interesting.
Might have to look into that.
Well, early next year, they're coming out with the new Tegra 3 chips in Android phones, quad core with a backup chip.
That's ridiculous. My computer doesn't even have a quad core yet.
Well, they benchmarked it against the Tegra 2, and it was more than twice as fast. Then they benchmarked it against the Core 2 Duo, and it still spanked it.
Wow.
But then it's got a fifth chip on board that does all low power stuff. So it'll shut down the other four cores and listen for phone calls.
Okay,
that's listen cool. for texts. Listen for all the other stuff.
That's pretty brilliant.
It's awesome. It's going to be really incredible. They're looking at putting in the first phone as a 4.7-inch AMOLED screen.
Jeez.
A gig of DDR3 on board. It's going to be a beautiful little...
Wow.
Series. And it's a phone that'll process faster than most computers.
Right, yeah. I know people whose computers are not that powerful.
Exactly. Wow. I was about to say, the laptop I just traded in was not as powerful as what's going to be coming out.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool.
Right?
Huh. But yeah, maybe I will have to look into the whole swap and just drop in my contract.
I'm gonna.
I want to hear some user reviews first before I do anything about it.
That, and I want them to have more phones available.
Yeah,
I would want a really good phone that I'll pay for.
Because I think the phone that they offer now it is a smartphone, but I believe it's like a BlackBerry style where it's half screen, half computer, right. So it's not a full touch screen or half keyboard. Sorry. So, but yeah, definitely something very promising to look into.
Absolutely.
So let's take a break, grab another beer.
Sounds good.
Cool. Hi, kids. Justin here, and I just wanted to take a minute to thank you all for listening to the Half Hour Happy Hour. If you've had half as much fun listening to it as we've had making it, well, then we've had twice as much fun making it as you've had listening to it. If you'd like to get more from us, you can check us out on Facebook at the Half Hour Happy Hour. We're also on Twitter at the HHHH. And, of course, the web, www.thehalfhourhappyhour.com. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
So as if you need more fun things to do with your cell phone, now you can spy on your house.
You can spy on your house?
Yeah.
Okay. See what it's up to when you're away?
Well, the first thing I thought was like...
Damn, house always just picking up and leaving as soon as I'm out the door.
You ever notice how your parents always seem to know what you were into as kids? And this is like before technology, like before like nanny cams and shit. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine like as... our generation becomes parents or is becoming parents, like now that they have, like right now, I mean, it's really basic stuff that's affordable. I mean, obviously you can have cameras all over your house and they can feed into your cell phone, but like for a couple $100, like there's a Craftsman AssureLink that if you forget the garage door, you can close it from your cell phone. There's another one that you can set up like motion detector. Like this one, it's a Go control panel. It's $500 ish. And it monitors everything with like high frequency radio. So like, for example, if a motion sensor went off in your alarm, it would lock your doors and send you video feed. So you could decide if it was suspicious or not and whether or not you should call the cops. I think my favorite one is $145 and it's called Fire Text. And it works with prepaid AT&T and T-Mobile SIM cards. And it draws so little power that the thing only needs to be changed once a year. But it's a smoke detector that when it goes off, it can text you and up to three neighbors.
Wow.
Saying, hey, your shit's on fire.
So when the battery's low, it doesn't just piss you off. Yeah. It pisses off your neighbors, too.
My, you know, anywhere I've ever lived, the smoke detector has gone off more times on accident than... I've never lived anywhere that's caught on fire. So right. Obviously the...
Right. But you burn your toast, and now three of your neighbors are going to know all about it.
And honestly, I mean, those smoke alarms are pretty... My neighbors can already hear when the smoke, the fire alarm
goes off.
Well,
I think it depends on where you live.
Yeah,
like,
true.
I guess, if you're out in the rural area, it's kind of a catch-22 because, like, my parents live on 2 acres.
Right.
So if their house caught on fire and they're out of town often, I'm sure that they would want, like... And maybe not necessarily neighbors, but it could text me. It could text, you know, my grandparents or something like that. Here, I mean, we live in a townhouse here. And if... you know, the neighbor down the street's house is on fire, I would like to know as soon as possible.
Well, you're on an end. So really, you just need to know that your neighbor's house is on fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then you've got a connecting wall, and then it's a serious issue. Or
well, I got
potentially.
News for you. If there's a
These houses are close enough that if any of them went up, the whole block would go up.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I would want, I mean, think about it. Because realistically, if it's my neighbor's house or if my neighbor's house or whatever else, I need at least a few minutes to get... important documents round up. We've got 4 cats in this house.
True.
That's I need a 20-minute head start. Yeah. Just for those fuckers.
I'm sorry, your fire is gonna have to wait. I have things to collect.
No, but okay, so anyway. But then this article got me thinking, like, can you imagine? Like, my mom used to work late and she would get home at like 7-8 o'clock at night, and I would have, you know, those couple hours off after getting off the bus and be like, Mom, I was doing my homework the whole time. And like, she pulls up video feed of me, like, you know, dancing on the kitchen table, or I don't never actually did that because I would have broken the kitchen table. But I mean, like, can you imagine if you could just, like, hold on, and see what your kids were doing?
This is one of those things where just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Well, and I've actually seen a commercial for that exact thing that basically puts a low jack on the kid's cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And now all kids have cell phones. They require them for whatever reason.
I'm okay with the low jack on your kids on your cell phone up to a certain age. I'm okay with it. I think once they hit a certain age,
it's... Are you kidding? It's once they start driving
that I think teenage rebellion already has been there. It exists. Teenage rebellion. We know this is a thing. Up to this point where we don't have low jack and hidden cameras and all that kind of stuff. If parents start throwing that stuff up at their kids, that's going to be a bad scene. I'm telling you, like, that's not going to be a good scene.
True. But I was a big brother. And I loved busting my sister in the middle of a beautiful lie that was well choreographed, well structured, and then I would just point my mom in the right direction.
But that's what it should be. Is you should have to put some effort into it, and you know, somebody rats you out or whatever. This kind of ubiquitous spying is
no
good will come from that.
No, make them work for it.
Yeah,
because there are certain kids who just get caught doing anything.
Right. Yeah,
and then others who can Ferris Bueller it.
Right.
They're perfectly fine.
Yep.
Not to the point of ruining a beautiful Ferrari, but otherwise, yes, absolutely.
I think my parents knew about a ton of shit that we pulled and just never said anything because they respected that kids are going to be kids to a certain extent. Yeah. I'm not saying, like, my thought was, like, I'm thinking little kids. Like, my original thought was, you know, if I'm a mom and I'm working upstairs or something like that, I can just, you know, peek into my kid's room without having to disturb their playtime. Because a lot of the times the kid will latch on to you and then expect you to entertain them.
That is
brilliant.
Yeah.
But as far as the low jack thing on the phone, like when I turned 15, 16, as soon as I got my permit, my mom was like, you will have this phone on you. And that was when Nokias were bricks.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't convenient to carry that bad boy around.
Right.
But you will have this on you at all times. You will not call anybody but me. And I will not, you know, I will call you if I need you, but you better answer the phone. I would expect the same thing from my kid. Like, not necessarily you're not allowed to call anybody, but this is when cell phones were ridiculous.
Right.
And it was basically you're driving. You're learning to drive. If something were to happen to you, I need to be able to get a hold of you. You need to be able to get a hold of us. Like, the low jack thing, you know what I would be okay with? If the low jack thing made a noise. Like, if my mom right now was like, where's my kid? And my phone was like, your mama's tracking you right now. Like, I think it's a open communication.
Yeah, that would be okay. Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of the times, like, you hear about those stories about, like,
I'm okay with it when the technology is used for safety and things like that. That's fine. When it crosses over into spying and control, that's where the problem is.
That's agreed. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily have a camera in the kid's room. To me, that's invasive.
Are baby monitors invasive?
Up to a certain age, okay.
Video versus audio, in my opinion.
Most baby monitors have video now.
Oh, they do have video. God, now. I'm old. Oh,
yeah. As a matter of fact, my sister has a it actually has both video and night vision. Mm-hmm. Like, so, and I swear, my niece is amazing. She's the cutest angel ever. But at night, when she looks right at that monitor, and it's like, I will eat your soul. It's mortifying.
She knows.
She totally knows.
And I was just going to make the point of I think it's okay. Like, you know, putting the camera in the kid's playroom, whatever. It's okay up until the age where they're going to want to do bad things. They're knowingly doing bad things. At that point, then it's, you know.
Then you should let them be unsupervised so they can do bad things.
Yeah.
I fail to see your point.
No, because if you control too much, you're going to screw up the kid's development in more ways than one.
Sometimes kids just
need to be kids.
They're going to learn. They have a lesson. To learn. They're going to get hurt.
They have to make mistakes. Learn lessons. If you take that away, it's like the whole people are getting sick because their parents are putting antibacterial stuff on them all the time. It's the same concept. You can't overprotect. Otherwise, you're going to have kids that can't take care of themselves when they get older.
Seriously. I love how Funk's getting completely passionate about this when he doesn't desire children at all. And I agree.
I'm just a 100% advocate of freedom. Like,
I agree with both of you.
You need to be able to learn and make your own mistakes.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite stories growing up as a kid was when I spent the night at a friend of mine's house and his bedroom was up on the second floor, right over the garage. So we could sneak out his bedroom window onto the roof of the garage. We'd put a ladder up the night before, and so we snuck down the ladder and we went and raised hell in the neighborhood. I mean, we're probably 13, 14 years old at this point. Get back to the house, there's no ladder to be found. We are busted dead to rights. It didn't require LoJack. It didn't require anything but a dad who was an army guy to go, oh, they think they're funny. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we ended up having to sleep out on his pool deck.
That's a good lesson.
No screen. You have a choice. Yep. Knock on the front door or... We're camping in the backyard without a tent right. in Orlando in the summer.
I got news for you. At that point,
we gave a pint of blood that night to mosquitoes.
You're already busted. Suck it up and knock on the door.
No chance. We were not having it. And his dad came out and made us breakfast the next morning, and he's like, so, why'd you guys decide to sleep outside? Oh, you know, it was a beautiful night out. He's like, yeah, balmy 83 with no breeze. Okay, you're both alive, so that's fine. Come on in and have some breakfast.
That's great.
My parents used to actually watch my sister and I do dishes. And my sister and I would have brutal knockdown fights while we did dishes. They would actually leave and go for a walk, and they would walk around the back of the house and watch us through the back window. And we only found this out when one time they were laughing so hard that we heard them. But it was their nightly entertainment for us. No, I completely agree. I believe that kids should get into shit because it's what makes them, like, you touch the stove, it's hot, don't do that again.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. Well, we never snuck out of another house. Like, after that, it became one of those things where I was like, okay, look, if I'm going out, I'm going to let my folks know, hey, I want to go out, there's something going on, whatever. Right. That's the situation. They're either going to say yes or no. If they say no, then I'm probably not supposed to go out because it's a dumb idea and I'm just too stupid to know.
Yep.
Yeah, then you listen. But
I used to steal my dad's car keys and sleep in his car.
Really?
Until he woke up. Woke up a little early to go to work one morning.
He scared the crap out of him.
I'm laying in the back of his car, and actually the car started moving. Like, I'm pretty sure he knew I was there, but he went driving down the road and then made me walk home in my jammies.
Well, my sister was little, and we had a van with our driveway was on an angle, and my dad just let her play in the van, no big deal. Except back then.
We've learned that lesson, I think.
Well, back then, you didn't require a key to get it out of drive or out of park. And so she puts it into reverse. Engine's not on or anything, but it rolls back. Hmm. Rolls across the street, rolls into the neighbor's yard, takes out a light post, a tree, like everything. And
see, that one's a lesson the parent learns.
Yes, absolutely. And my dad went, okay, so kids don't get to play in the car by themselves anymore.
Yep. That's a parent lesson.
Right, yeah. My sister didn't learn anything. She was three. But except, ooh, I can make it roll. Yep. So,
wow.
Yeah. So no segue at all on this one, but I don't know if you guys have seen the new commercials that the USPS is putting out.
I have not.
No cable in this house.
Our United States Postal Service had an ad that distracted me during football yesterday, and I went, oh my God, I have to bring this up tomorrow. They are pushing the use of more paper. You need to be mailed statements. You need to be mailed everything. Email sucks. Emails get lost, unlike USPS right. mail.
So where's my bank statement, USPS? Well, I don't know.
And so I finally had to Google it, and I found this wonderful article that says, new U.S. Postal Service ad campaign, email sucks, so mail stuff instead.
Right. Because if there's one thing that our economy has shown us, the key to success is deny reality and push your own. Well, it worked fine for Blockbuster.
Absolutely. I mean, and then make sure you have a marketing budget so you can spread the word. Yeah, because really, that's what matters.
They're threatening to drop like a day's worth of service for the post office, and they're spending money on this ad campaign. Yeah, that's...
DHL, profitable.
Right.
UPS. Profitable. FedEx, record profitable. USPS, greatest loss in history.
Right, yeah.
Like,
wow.
How much is a damn stamp nowadays?
I don't even know.
I don't know. 46?
Yeah. I think it's in the 40s, yeah.
Like 46 cents?
I haven't bought one since it was high 30s. So.
No. And you can get discounts on them, like if you do bulk or if you do a postcard. But I honestly, yeah, I think it's about 46 cents.
I'm going to look it up because none of us know. How awesome is that?
Well, because when was the last time you mailed something?
Right, yeah.
44 cents for a first class stamp.
Wow.
Well, I mail stuff at work all the time, but I use a little postage machine and never pay attention to what sticks on there.
That's one of the things that always got me about stamps, is it's first class stamp. What if I don't care when my letter gets there and I want to buy like a third class stamp? I've never seen the option to buy
No, there's like third class, fifth class, but it's mostly for packaging.
For packaging, right.
Or advertisements.
Right.
Or like stuff you really don't care if it gets there or not.
Yeah, like book rates and stuff like that.
Actually, really funny story. I was reading an article about people who have decided now when they get those applications for new credit cards in the mail. They will fill out the application to just say, stop sending me this shit, put it in the postage paid envelope that it comes in, and ship it back so that the company has to pay the postage.
That's a good idea.
Let's do that.
I'm seriously considering that. Yeah, because we had the conversation before the show. I mean, you know, every week I rarely check the mail because nothing ever comes. But, you know, I wind up with a decent stack of mail every week. I haven't had a relevant piece of mail in months.
No.
It's just garbage at this point.
We check the mail when we're expecting something. And I checked the mail today because I was expecting a package.
Right.
And I happened to unload all the shite in the box.
Yeah, it's
and then
ridiculous.
I took the box of which my package came in and loaded up all the crap that came in the mailbox into the box and threw it in the trash.
Actually, the piece of mail I got today was from Google, of all people. You're sending me paper mail? I've got three Google accounts. What the
Google heck? Sends us AdWords stuff.
AdWords
at least once a month.
Yeah.
Which is baffling to me. Like, you know I use your service.
Right.
You know I own a company. And it's a digital company.
Right. Just email me that. And the thing is, those AdWords, they send you a little card that's got a little code on it.
Yeah.
Email me the friggin' code.
That's it. And honestly, they may even be emailing it to me, and I'm just not reading it because I don't care.
No, they're not emailing it to you.
I've never seen one.
No. So, yeah, that's...
Mail just needs to go away.
It does. If you don't have... 3.5 million people are at least getting their stuff like digitally that
right,
way.
Yeah, right.
They don't even need mail. Who needs it? Is my big question.
Your ultimately, grandparents.
No. Interesting fact. My aunts, uncles, and cousins will email my mom. My mom will then print out their emails and take them over to my grandma for hand delivery.
My 92-year-old grandfather is using email. I mean, it's not... There's no excuse at this point.
Okay, but that email is one thing. Like, hey, I'm going to send you pictures of my cat or my niece or whatever. Old people are very, very hesitant. The older generation... Excuse me, I didn't call you guys old... Old people is Jer. older people do not use things like online banking or whatever else because the problem is you hear about that one security breach.
Right, and it's,
And they're like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And Jer and I have both worked in banking. Trying to get a 90-year-old woman to use online banking is like banging your head against a wall.
Plus, you also have to consider at that point, they're retired. They got nothing else to do. It's like, I can spend 3 hours at the bank doing whatever rather than...
One of the images on this commercial was a woman taking a magnet and putting up a bill or whatever on the refrigerator. And the text underneath, the voiceover is going, your refrigerator door has never been hacked. Really, the person you're selling this on... are probably people who are already reluctant to go digital anyway. They're either Luddites or...
Yeah, right.
What the hell?
their ad is targeted at converting already digital users back to paper.
Again,
that's not going to work.
No.
Your refrigerator door has never been hacked, but do you file every single bill you've ever had on your refrigerator? In which case, when was the last time you ate?
Right.
Because you can't get to it. So at some point, you have to take that shit, get it off your refrigerator, throw it in the trash where some guy's waiting outside to collect your identity.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Or somebody comes inside and looks at your bills and knows how much you pay, how much you owe on your credit card, all that shit, because you're keeping it on your refrigerator door.
Mm-hmm.
We should pause that commercial, zoom in, and then hack that bank account.
There you go.
They are.
And that's, you know, a lot of identity theft comes from that kind of paper stuff. That's why they invented shredders, is to make it a little bit harder.
Right.
So because paper is an insecure medium.
So first, the post office is going to be posting record losses.
Right.
And then shredder companies are going to start posting, really, we're destroying the economy by using email, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Wow.
I love it.
So on the topic of more ridiculous wastes of money... I have a great article. It's one that's actually been sitting in my box for a little bit, and I just finally read it. And it's when you read it, it's really mind blowing. Is the word that comes to mind. but it's the title of the article is The True Cost of Commuting. You know, for everybody, you've probably gathered by now that we live in Sarasota, where, you know, generally technological things like that, a lot of the tech jobs are not in Sarasota. They're up in either St. Pete or Tampa, which is, you know, a 50, 60 mile drive, 40 minutes to an hour, something like that. And what's really amazing about that is a lot of the people that live in Sarasota make that commute and whatever, like they don't think anything about it. I looked at jobs up there and people were like, yeah, you know, 40 minutes each way, 60 miles is, you know, no big deal, whatever. And I looked at them, I was like, are you freaking insane? Like, so you break it down, the IRS's estimate of total driving cost, this is gas, maintenance, car, all that kind of stuff, is 51 cents per mile. Mm-hmm. So building on that, you take a working couple who each commutes 38 miles round trip, 80 minutes round trip, basically costs $19 a day and adds almost an entire work day each week to their time. They're behind the wheel about 8 hours a week driving right. back and forth. So you're essentially working 6 days out of your 7 day week. After 10 years of this, it has cost them $125,000 in yep. money and 1.3 working years of their time each. So after 10 years of this, 1.3 of that you spent behind the wheel.
Right. Where you're not doing anything of value to nothing. Anyone at all.
Nothing.
Just burning gas.
Right.
And costing about 51 cents a mile.
And that's every 10 years that you do this. And considering the average person works for, you know, 30, 40 years, like,
yeah.
That's 4 years of your life, you know, 5 years of your life gone, and $125,000 of wealth. Most of the people that I know do not have that much net worth.
It's, no,
you know, it's becoming rarer and rarer to have that. So you know, ridiculous. And consider extrapolate that over, you know, 40 years. That's close to $500,000 that you've right. blown just by driving.
Yeah, you could have bought a house closer.
Yeah, and so it goes on to. You know, it says the IRS's, you know, cost of 51 cents per mile is kind of a little high. There's ways that you can get it lower. So it goes into some more examples, and it says, okay, let's assume an average cost in there of about 34 cents per mile. And let's assume the value of a person's time is $25 an hour, because that's what the national average is. So for each mile you drive round trip to work daily, it equals $170 annual fee. And then considering it takes about 6 minutes to drive each one of those miles, it adds 25 hours per year for every mile that you drive round trip to work. $170, 25 hours, which is $625 of your time. So basically, each mile you drive is $795 a year that you're spending.
So I drive 10 miles to work, which is nice. 20 miles round trip.
Almost 8,000 a year.
Isn't that insane?
Yep. And so that, you know, for each mile is $795 per year. $795 per year will pay the interest on a $15,900 of a home loan at 5% interest rate. So by not driving 1 mile round trip, you can pay the interest on almost $16,000 worth of home loan. So this leads a logical person to assume that they'd be willing to pay $15,900 more for a house that is 1 mile closer to work, or $477,000 more for a house that is 30 miles closer to work. $500,000 more for a house that's 30 miles closer to work. That's what it,
yeah.
You're literally spending that money anyway. So
people don't get numbers.
And this is the thing about this is it's a classic example of human nature. We are very instant gratification, short term. Right. We don't think about the fact that I've got to, you know, it takes me 5 miles to work, whatever. It's 5 miles, you know, 6 minutes. Add that up over the year and the number gets astronomical. It gets ridiculous. But we're not geared to think long term like that.
Well, like that. I mean, my commute's 10 miles even door to door. But it takes me a half hour to do it every day. And that's twice a day.
Right.
So 20 miles is an hour worth of driving every day for me.
And, you know, 5 days a week, that's, you know, almost a whole work day. You know, once you factor out lunches and bullshit time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to take lunches to work? I don't do that.
Yeah. Can I please have a 5 hour work day? Please? That's like half my work day, if that.
So, and you know, it goes on and it kind of breaks it down, you know, adopting these numbers for people who are making a minimum wage right now, which is $7.50. Each mile of car commuting costs $1.43 from your workday. So if you have to drive 10 miles to go to work, to go to your 5-hour shift at Outback, you're essentially only making $5 an hour because of the cost it took you to get there and back. Two thirds. Yeah.
Wow.
So, right. It's really ridiculous. And these numbers are based on driving in the U.S. And it's worth noting that we have one of the cheapest driving costs in the world.
Right.
You go to Canada or UK, you're looking at 30 to 50% more. Commuting is an expensive prospect.
Well, in a lot of other places, your commute is by train or by whatever, yes. Where at least you can do something.
Yeah. but driving your car to work, if you can avoid that,
yeah.
That should be, and this article, it really does go into, it makes the point that this is what is making us poor. What is making Americans, Canadians poor is this commute to work that people are willing to blindly accept a 40-minute each way commute each day. And this is that, in my experience, that is very common. A lot of people do that.
Oh, sure.
And it's, you know.
Well, and there's two aspects of that, really. One is your daily commute is unnecessary in most cases. Mm. There's some jobs you need personnel there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, Outback.
Right.
You're open from 9 a.m. to whatever. You got to have people there, whatever. But if you work in an office
and you're sitting there at a desk
in front of a computer,
no reason to be there at all.
Companies would save money
mm-hmm.
because they could offer their people less salary to not come into work.
Yep.
They wouldn't have the overhead.
Plus,
of
they
a
don't
building.
Have to pay for it. Yeah, exactly. Energy. The power, the air conditioner, things like that.
They would drive their own cost down mm-hmm. astronomically.
Yep.
I've got clients who fly. Literally, they hit 6 cities a week
mm-hmm.
going from meeting to meeting to meeting. You cannot tell me that's cost effective.
No, it can't be.
You're blowing, let's call it conservatively, $3,000 a week mm-hmm. on travel expenses, not including hotels.
And that doesn't make any sense, especially with the – I mean, we've got some pretty sophisticated telepresence technology
yes.
these days. And you can't tell me, you know, yeah, I realize a good setup of that is probably, you know, $100,000, $500,000 even. I mean, I know they're not cheap.
They can be expensive, but they can also be inexpensive.
But when you consider you're flying one person to 6 cities a week, that's, you know,
right.
that's going to be – close to $500,000 a year for one person. You add mm-hmm. that up to everybody and it pays for itself. It's really
absolutely.
And it's again, I think it's one of those things where it's tradition, you know, companies are used to their employees coming into work. They're not, mm-hmm. you know, they don't know how to give up that control of having that direct oversight.
Right.
But it's,
whereas people actually do their work or they don't do their work. And if they don't, you're going to know it.
And exactly. Fire them. Yeah. You're going to do your work or not. And, you know, me personally, I've been working. I'm fortunate enough that I'm a programmer. So I've been working from home a lot more lately. I find I work longer hours when I'm working from home because I'm not sitting there. Okay. 5 o'clock, time to go home. It's,
right.
you know, my computer is there. I'm going to, you know, pay attention to it. I'm going to do a little bit of work, you know, all day long. It's
not, right.
You're going to get more productivity out of somebody.
Absolutely.
Not to mention like the sheer amount of time that people waste at work bullshitting oh, with yeah. other people. Or, I mean, my mom used to tell me that if I spent half the amount of time doing what I needed to get done rather than thinking of a way to get out of it, I would already be done with it. And it's true for employees too. Like there sure. are plenty of people, you watch them.
It's a common, it's pretty much part of the culture is that you know, the
so
water cooler
need
talk,
to stop
whatever.
Being paid hourly and
yes.
they start need to be paid for their production.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was actually an argument we had to create in business school was what's more important, an hourly wage or a salary? And the truth is if you're paying somebody for 40 hours of their week, then you're renting their time
mm-hmm.
and their time is worth X dollars an hour.
Right.
Be that salaried or unsalaried, it doesn't matter. But if you're paying them for a job,
right.
accomplishing a certain task every week, then statistically, after 3 weeks, they will be 30% more efficient at that job, freeing up 30% of their time.
If they're salaried or if they're...
Regardless.
Okay.
You train somebody to do something
okay.
and they get faster at doing it.
Right, right.
That's...
Yeah, yeah.
So now a 40-hour week of training them has just turned into a 30-hour week.
Mm-hmm.
Even less, 27-hour week. And so from that 27-hour week, now they've got 13 hours where they're getting paid to be there.
Right.
And if they look busy, they don't have to take on any additional responsibilities.
Yep.
Or they can look not busy, take on more responsibilities for no extra cash. For no extra
money, right, yeah.
And so where's the incentive for your employees to be like, hey, I'm done. What else can I do?
Yeah.
I plan on a big Christmas this year.
And most most people who are in that position that they can do that, I think, have figured out the look busy strategy.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah. But that's what you do.
And you have plenty of time to figure out what that look busy strategy is.
Right.
Sure. So it actually benefits the company to not pay hourly, but pay for a job.
Right.
And the sooner that job is completed and done right, then you go, okay, hey, look, you finished this real fast. I got another gig. Here's the thing. We'll just tack it onto your work.
Do you want it or not? That's the bigger thing. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. You're getting paid X amount to do this task. And if you want more money and are willing to give up more of your time, or you can take the same money and do it faster and all that jazz, and that's fine too.
Right.
Your call. But if you give the opportunity to take on additional responsibilities for additional cash, how many people are going to go?
That's interesting.
Yeah,
because that's very similar to, it sounds like, a freelance kind of market, but but in a,
with all
in
the benefits,
corporate.
Yeah,
huh, that's an interesting
concept.
But
the important thing the important thing in order to make the system work is that you have to continually pay the same amount for the same amount of like work done.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you got better, more efficient, faster, whatever at the job doesn't mean I can then offer you less, because that's essentially what.
No.
Our corporate structure does right now.
Right.
Yes. Well, you doing that task is it's earning money for the company in some way, shape, or form. That has a certain dollar value. We're going to pay you slightly less than that dollar value, or much less than it. I mean, depending upon the job, it doesn't matter. We're going to offer you $40,000 a year to do this task every day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Done. From that point.
But once you get to the point where you can do that task more efficiently.
Exactly.
And then they give you a second task. Now your value, your as an employee, it's not beneficial.
We've got a second task. It's going to take up to train 20 hours. And it just so happens it takes you half as long to do your old job.
Right.
So you got 20 hours to do the training. You'll get it down faster than that in no time. We're going to give you 20 grand to do this task, and you'll have it in 10 hours in a matter of months.
Right.
Do you want it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take a 50% raise for more responsibilities. Done.
That'd be awesome.
And if the company is doing their due diligence and making sure that there's ROI on every person there, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have people show up.
Right.
You don't have to have any kind of – you just need managers going, hey, is this project done?
And those managers become managers of return on investment.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it is.
Herding sheep.
Yes.
It's, you know, for the company, for the management level, it's the amount of effort involved for them, I think, is the same. It's just the effort has to be applied differently.
To numbers rather than to
people. It's not physical managers who are, you know, watching people. It's managing the concept, the task, the return on investment, things
absolutely
like that. Yeah.
And then you can actually pay out bonuses based on that.
Right.
And so, you know, when I started seeing companies that were basing their ROI on individuals, on full-time employee groups.
Right.
And they were looking at $400,000 a year per employee is what their return was.
Yeah.
Return per employee, $400,000.
I always love doing that at work. It's like, okay, let me – and usually it's, you know, you get the return on investment pretty quickly. Like I could look at, you know, 2 to 3 months worth of projects and be like, okay, I've paid for myself for the year.
I've got a friend who was an engineer, and he had been working at restaurants and stuff as management for a long time. Finally goes back and uses his engineering degree as an electrical engineer for a big company that was building a medical school. And his first day on the job, he's walking around, he's looking at blueprints, double checking everything, and goes, hey guys, right here, this is going to be a problem. Well, why? Because you have it going through a stairwell, and it's going to put an I-beam at 4 feet above the stairs. And they went, oh, yeah, that could be a problem. So they got it adjusted. They had it rerun. Everything was fine. And he literally saved them twice his annual salary on that one gig.
Yep.
Didn't take him long to move up. Like, literally, before that project was done, he was the guy in charge of the project. Other people had just retired, resigned, took on different roles. But yeah, he was the guy in charge at the end of it, and it wasn't 2 to 3 years.
Yep.
Brilliant.
So yeah, and it's, you know, you have to know what you're worth. It's there. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a lot of value in being able to point out your return on investment to employers. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. But But yeah, so if you can avoid driving to work to do it,
all the better.
Definitely the way to go. So I think that about wraps it up for the week.
Indeed.
Yep. Thank you once again for joining us. As always, we are on Facebook/The Half Hour Happy Hour.
Twitter at the HHHH.
Yep. And the web at thehalfhourhappyhour.com. Beautiful website. It's awesome.
Go check it out.
Yep. So we'll see y'all next week.